It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goth.
Morena me, Phil Goth. Kei te pihi a koe.
Kei te pai, atamarie, Rachel. Good to be on the program again.
Oh, it's nice to have you up here. Hey, it is, of course, Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori across Aotearoa at the moment, which is a great week to celebrate one of our national languages. What's the Auckland Council got planned for Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori?
Well, first of all, kia kaha te reo Māori and tēnei tamihi nui kia koutou. A number of things. Obviously, we actively promote the use of our second official language, and that extends to a whole range of things. You go to any library and you'll see signs in te reo. If you travel up the lifts in the building we're in, the floor that you're on will be announced in both te reo and in English. Auckland Transport, the announcements being made are also in te reo. And the council's working with our local boards so that where we've got parks, it may have an English name, but it may originally have had a Maori name. So we will we'll do research into that and work with the iwi to make sure that it can be known by both its English name and its Maori name. And of course, within the council and the council group itself, the encouragement of employees to pick up Maori language if that's their desire. I think what we want to do is what we're doing across New Zealand as a whole. We're taking it seriously. It's unique to New Zealand. We want the language to survive and thrive, and we want to encourage people. It might be just casual use of the language. Mm-hmm. It might be a more intensive desire to actually learn to be fluent in Maori. And for some of our new residents, they'll be learning English. They'll want to retain, and we'd encourage them to retain the language of their place of origin and share that with their children. But also, you know, you go to a preschool centre, and you'll find that the kids from whatever ethnicity, they'll be there singing Māori waiata. That will be part of their growing up in New Zealand. And I guess the other point I'd make, I just remember going to a Muslim school after the tragic events of the 15th of March, and just watching the young Muslim boys doing the haka and the boys and girls singing a waiata. They'd come to this country. They wanted to hold their faith and their identity, but they also wanted to embrace what was unique about New Zealand. And I thought that was really quite inspiring.
It's pretty remarkable. We're really fortunate to have such a beautiful native language, but we've also got quite a fraught history in this country of how colonially we've dealt with this language. I mean, there's like history of abuse attached to people speaking the language. How do you think, motions like Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori help, rectify some of that damage that's been done historically?
I think there has been historic damage, and you know, people of my generation, you know, Maori people of my generation, will say, you know, how they were chastised or punished at school for speaking Maori, and even in relatively recent times, everybody remembers Nadia Glavish and Dame Nadia Glavish now, and when she was a telephone operator and being threatened with the loss of a job because she greeted people with kia ora on the phone, and you know, that just wouldn't happen today. So we have had a change in mindset, and people are embracing it. They're not being forced to learn anything, but they are taking the opportunity to say, hey, this is something that's special about our country. It's what makes us different from the rest of the world. Let's try a little bit. And, you know, there are different things in Maori language that people will use now from day to day. I think what's really important, though, and it's really important particularly for Maori families, is that they have the opportunity to ensure that the language not only survives but thrives in everyday use. And I think for anyone of Maori heritage, that will be particularly important.
Yeah, totally. Would you like to see more te reo Maori in schools, for example?
Yeah, and I think we are going, you know, starting right at the early childhood level. And I just noticed that with my 2-year-old granddaughter, my wife has been buying books, children's books that are partly in te reo, and it just gives her a bit of a flavour of it, and she grows up naturally thinking, well, this is a country that is bicultural, this is a country that's multicultural, and we're pleased to use an English language which is international and which is part of our own heritage. But to encourage Kiwis, who have traditionally been pretty insular, to look beyond just having one language and picking up a second and maybe a third language, even if it's just in, you know, the ability to converse and on things day to day without, you know, in depth knowledge about it. I think when you understand somebody else's language, you also, it also helps you understand their culture.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the Auckland Central City Master Plan. So, public consultation on the refresh of Auckland's City Centre Master Plan opened yesterday. Phil, what exactly is the Central City Master Plan?
It's how we plan for, you know, what is in many senses the economic and cultural heart of the city. You know, I don't want to be exclusive about the rest of the city. Everybody in their own particular city centre, you know, they want something in their local area that they can see developed and they can be proud of, and we're starting to do that with regeneration projects right around the region. But what makes, I suppose, Auckland city centre special is a number of things. One, it's 20% of our GDP now generated from the centre of the city, and probably about 6% of the whole country's GDP. There's 200,000 people that come to visit the city centre each day. You know, 120,000 people working here now daily. That's jumped by 30,000 in the last few years, and the resident population's, you know, more than doubled from 24,000 to over 55,000. And it's also the place where tourists will come. You know, whenever you go to another country and to the cities of that other country, you look for the city centre. What marks out this place as being different? And we want the city centre to be more than just a through route for traffic. And in the past, we've been a bit that way. We're starting to develop things that link the city to the sea, and that's an important part of the master plan. So the water, you know, it links into the waterfront development plan, and areas like the Wynyard Quarter, areas like the Viaduct Basin, and, you know, with this America's Cup, the whole of Wynyard Point. And, you know, in the next few years, we'll see those, and we're seeing it happen already, those hazardous substance tanks being demolished, or in some cases we're keeping some of them to, you know, to create a sense of what this part of the city was once like, but a headland park and a linear park. What we'll see ultimately is the pedestrianisation of Queen Street, and make Queen Street a place where you want to go to congregate and to enjoy. And, you know, it's partly about, you know, why are we making it more pedestrian focused? Because we've got so many more pedestrians. The number of pedestrians have doubled in the last decade. If you look down at where the precinct, new precinct quarter is going, and the building going up there, there's 10,000 people going to be working in that square area, you know, where PwC and the new building and the Hong Kong and Shanghai banking building is. 10,000 people.
It's pretty
people
say, remarkable numbers.
Yeah, why are you working on Key Street? Because we can't fit the pedestrians on the footpath. Yeah. Go up to High Street and you've got car congestion and pedestrian congestion, and you don't need car parking on the road in High Street. Actually, you don't need cars in High Street apart from service vehicles. So it's that sort of transformation. And, you know, places like the Britomart Court Centre there, and, you know, places where, you know, when you go to a city, it's great to be in. You imagine Victoria Street with a, you know, a linear park down one side of Victoria Street, and a walkway from Albert Park down to Victoria Park. Hey, we can make the city really impressive, really exciting to be in.
It's totally awesome that we've got so many more people coming into the centre of town, and as you were saying, it would be great to have it much more accessible in a sort of, I guess, pedestrianised way and things like that. If people want to have their say on this proposal for the master plan, how can they do that, Phil?
They have until, I think we've got about a month until almost to mid October for them to put their submissions. So the first thing, they can do that online. They can look up and they can see what's in the original City Centre Master Plan that dates back, and the Waterfront Plan, which dates back to 2012, and how that has been changed. And when we get their feedback, that then helps us shape the direction and content of what we do with the master plan. So we're not doing this in isolation. We're doing this in consultation, just like we are, you know, when we're redesigning High Street, which I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. It's a co-design. We're talking to the people that own the businesses there, that run the businesses there, the people that walk down the street, the people that work in the street, the people that live in the street. So what we want to do is make sure that our planning is in sync with what people utilising and living in the area actually want for their city.
Fantastic.
Yeah, hey, it's not imposing. It's working with people to say, hey, how can we do this even better than we have in the past?
Absolutely. Hey, just quickly before we let you go, there's an interesting story about Waiheke Island and the 10-ton project, which is diverting construction waste from landfill. So it was spearheaded by Jeremy O'Hanlon, who noticed that there was a big problem with the amount of construction waste headed to landfill. And they got a bit of money from a council grant to set up their project, which is awesome. And it seems to be working really well. But do you think maybe we need a bit more council-run systems set up to prevent the burden sort of falling on these local industries and local businesses? Do you think we could be doing a bit more centrally to sort that out?
And we are. I had the pleasure of going up to Warkworth just last week, and we opened a new community resource centre there, where it's built ironically on the site of the old landfill, so that what we're doing, everything that comes in is sorted out so that we keep to an absolute minimum what is actually waste. They've got a quite nice notice up there. 65% of your rubbish actually isn't rubbish. It's stuff we can reuse, recycle. You know, it might be the green waste that we can mulch, turn into mulch. The food waste that we'll gradually be picking up around the city over the coming years. So that is then composted rather than, you know, making up 40% of your waste bin load and going to landfill. It's about recycling everything that we can recycle.
Mm-hmm.
And the big challenge there will be, of course, getting onshore recycling, and I keep pushing government on this. We are running out of the time when we'll be able to export our recycling. Well, we can't do it to China now. Probably we're running out of space to do it to Malaysia or Indonesia. It's time we recycled onshore, and that will be a big challenge for the future as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
Brief and window of sunshine.
yeah, it is too. And ka kite anō.
Ka kite anō. See you next week.
Cheers. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thanks.